Hello, and welcome to Cybility Savvy, the show that demystifies cybersecurity for not-for-profit boards and leaders. I'm your host, Michaela Leovorg, and today we're going to talk with Amy Tarrant and Sue Noble, who have authored a book to give organisations the tools and frameworks to manage change more effectively. Be sure to listen all the way through for a special discount just in time for Christmas.
Cybility Savvy, the quickest way to go from cyber confused to cyber savvy.
In a podcast first, we're going to treat you to two guests today. We're delighted to welcome Amy Tarrant back to the cast with her co-author, Sue Noble. If you've not listened to Amy's previous episode, in which we covered change delivery, insurance, among other topics, be sure to check it out. So, welcome both. Would you like to introduce yourselves? Sue?
Yeah, hi. Hello, everybody. I'm really pleased to be here today. So I run a business called Noble Learning Limited, which is essentially a coaching and mentoring organisation. Also deliver leadership leadership development. And, you know, I love everything about coaching. I train others to coach. I'm a coach supervisor and I'm also an executive coach. So I'm really pleased to be here today to share with you all my sort of enthusiasm for what coaching is, particularly around the subject of change.
Well, thank you, Michaela, for having me back. My name's Amy Tarrant. This is my second visit to this podcast. I've been delivering organisational change for approximately 15 years now, but mainly concentrated in the insurance sector. That's my passion. Most recently, I led the change delivery team for a London market insurer. I actually have stepped out of full-time work for a year to do a full-time master's degree in law. I'm particularly interested in the legal and regulatory aspects of insurance. It cuts across quite a lot to cyber and data protection, which is obviously very relevant for this podcast. And Sue and I met actually at the Change Management Institute, where I set up their Southeast chapter. And she and I realised that there was definitely an opportunity to marry up the skill sets of coaching into the change discipline.
That's great. Thank you. So on meeting one another then, what was it that actually sort of went from meeting another colleague to actually, let's write a book together?
So I have something to say about this, actually, because one of the delights for me is meeting somebody who is very much in organisational change and project work, who also shared a passion, as I did, for coaching. It was just through some really useful conversations that we had, and then it was during lockdown, actually, and I'd always had this idea about writing, but I wasn't sure what the angle ought to be. And then I contacted Amy and I said, do we have a book to write? And I'm really pleased to say she said, I think we do. And that's really where it started from.
From my perspective, it was coincidental that I think it was probably late 2019, early 2020. I kept on having the same conversation again and again with change practitioners, and the word coaching kept on popping up. And it was becoming so pervasive that I thought, okay, I need to look into this, where these two disciplines mesh and complement each other. And then it so happened that Sue and I met around a similar time. As she said, lockdown kicked in, so we had a little bit of capacity. And I didn't want to come out of lockdown without having a big project to show for it, so it was perfect. And we did some research around what else has been written on these two topics and how they come together, because to us it just seemed so obvious. Someone else surely must have gone and done the same thing, but they hadn't, and I'm sure we'll talk about that a bit more.
Yeah, actually, that was going to be one of the next things I sort of picked up on, actually, about, you know, you've been having these conversations with change practitioners, and it's kind of like, well, there is a huge wealth of information out there on coaching and change already. So what is it that was missing, do you think, that made you both sort of think, yes, we definitely have a book to write here? What was that key thing for you?
Well, one of the things behind me, there's a whole library of books on coaching. And so there are hundreds and hundreds of books which are aimed at professional coaches, sort of tools and techniques, various things about how to coach. And also the same about change. There are hundreds of books related to change and how organizational change and how to take people through change. But one of the things we found was that there was nothing really specific which sort of linked some of the challenges of organisational change and how people who weren't familiar with what coaching was or how to use these skills could actually use them and learn about them in a really practical way. So that really was our original angle. Is, you know, this isn't necessarily for seasoned coaches, but it was actually more for people who were really at the hub of managing change in an organisation and to help them support people through what is a very difficult time.
Yeah, I would definitely echo that. It's more our primary target for the book is definitely the change practitioners who we believe can adopt or assimilate the soft skills of coaching rather than aiming it at coaches who are unlikely to suddenly become change practitioners, though of course they may be interested. But I think there are so many books, as Sue alluded to, that are very borderline academic but very theoretical. And what we were really, really resolute on doing was producing something that shows people how. So don't just tell me that there's a synergy between these two disciplines. Show me through case studies, role plays, how I could actually do that and deliver that in real life. And we're not saying to people, you must go and qualify as a coach before you're allowed to do any of these things. What we're saying is empowering them today. You can go and do this today. I think that's really powerful.
Absolutely. One of the things which we've included, Amy mentioned there about these role plays and scenarios, is actually give people an idea about, imagine if you asked these questions, what would the response likely to be? Because what we find is that when change tends to happen is because of stress, because of time, people can go into the tell you as opposed to ask. And so what we really wanted to express is the importance of do more asking, you know, help people to feel listened to in this conversation instead of being commanded or being told or directed in what there needs to happen, because that never works. It's never, ever worked, and it doesn't work in the here and now.
Actually, that relates to a question that came in from one of our listeners, actually, where they're asking about, the book does seem to advocate a respectful approach to supporting employees to handle change. And you know, shouldn't that approach actually of respect be part of the way an organisation creates and formulates change in the first place?
Yeah, and absolutely. I mean, we have to remember that we're not talking about every single organisation who adopts this TEL approach, but traditionally, what we find is that there's, you know, the traditional way of managing change, but people seem to be forgotten about how they're affected and how they're impacting. So absolutely, it would be wonderful if all organisations can have that people approach, but actually often they don't know how to do it. So we're hoping our book helps to share with people about, look, there's some very simple techniques and some very simple tools, which is possible just by sitting down and listening to somebody and hearing what they've got to say, and then not fixing it for them, but helping them to understand, okay, what support do you need and how are we going to get to a really good outcome?
That's such a key point about not fixing it for them, because certainly I found in my career when I just sort of started using coaching skills, I was still in that kind of problem solving, wanting to help them fix instead of asking the questions and helping them figure out their sort of way. I will say that I provide mentoring services. I'm not a coach, but I do use coaching skills. Sue, could you perhaps just sort of explain the difference for people, and then also just to throw in as well, whilst I'm at it, sometimes I feel it almost borders into counselling, and that's obviously a very careful line not to cross. So perhaps you could just sort of share something about that for our listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. And the number of people when I do one-to-one coaching, I ask them what they understand coaching to be. And often they say, well, you're going to give me some advice and techniques. And actually, I'm very quick to say, well, that isn't really what coaching is. So if we look at what mentoring is first, I mean, what would tend to happen is if you're looking for a mentor, you're looking for somebody with the skills and experience to help you get to where you want to get to. So it could be a career decision. So that person will have experienced and share their knowledge and experience, which is very different to what coaching is. So as a professional coach, the power is with the person. So the wisdom comes from the other person, the coach, the client, the coachee. So as a coach, my role is to understand where it is that my client wants to get to. So there'll be a goal, there'll be a future focus, and to help them to get to that point by asking questions to help them think of things in a different way, a different perspective, get them to think about other people in their system, if you like. But also there's a bit of a past as well. I don't just ignore the past. A question I often ask is, so how has your upbringing shaped the person you are today? Because it's such a powerful question to ask, because we can't ignore that who we are today is also linked to our past. And so that's often a question which people aren't expecting. And you could argue that, oh, you're now veering into counselling. But actually, counselling is very different because it tends to be more past focus. It tends to be more psychological, tends to be more about past relationships, but less about necessarily about the future, although it can be. So counselling is more psychological, more therapeutic, whereas coaching is far more future focused. But to be absolutely honest, the two tend to merge to a certain extent, particularly with the new type of coaching which is coming through now. So the other thing about the role of coach and me when I'm working with a client is what's very important is that it's a confidential conversation. And it's not about what is important for me, but it's very much about what's important for the client. So it's that balance between me building rapport, but not actually getting in the way of the conversation. And all the questions I ask is in relation to what is going to be helpful for you in order for you to get to where you need to. So, but this confidential piece is very important because often people think, well, you've been employed by the organisation and what are you going to say to my manager as a result of that?
That's so important. One of the services we offer here at Sitability Consulting is mentoring for organisations, which is a slightly different offering to what we do for individuals. It's an interesting one because we're helping the individual in terms of, you know, their career in cybersecurity and, you know, their sort of efficacy in doing their day job. But as you say, that's a confidential conversation focused on them and what they want. At the same time, we have the regular briefings with the manager, and they're representing the organisation and what the organisation wants. So you have to be very sort of clear and careful about what the mentee has agreed can be said to the manager. And one of the things that I've been doing, and I'm sure Sue, this is absolutely standard practice for coaches everywhere, is having that sort of contract at the start that sets out, you know, what's okay, what's not, the confidentiality, etc.
So this sort of reminds me of a recent course I did for an organisation around mentoring skills, and the conversation around the importance of contracting it comes up. But it's part of the course. When you get the contracting right, things are less likely to fall apart later. And one of the things is around what you can and can't agree between the mentee and the mentee's manager. And what happens if the mentee's manager says, I've got a bit of a problem with the person that you're mentoring. Could you just try and have a conversation about it? Which is not acceptable. So I always say that the contracting is absolutely important, in the same way as when I'm working with a manager whose manager has asked me to coach, you know, their employee. And we have this sort of three-way contract to say, cards on the table, what is it you want from this person by the end of the sessions, because you're sponsoring them, and what is it you want, client, in terms of which sort of supports that as well. So this is it's something for everyone.
Yeah, no, that's really helpful. Thank you.
I wanted to pick up on something that you mentioned in the question that you asked from your other listener with regards to, I think it was along the lines of not telling, you know, when you're coaching people through change, because we want to get them on side, don't we? We want to get them to collaborate with us and come with us on the journey. And one of the things that we decided to do with this book was actually include a piece at the end around setting up a long-lasting in-house coaching capability, because specifically for that point, we don't just want people to be coaching for change in an in-flight project and then stopping doing that, because it doesn't embed that culture of continuous collaboration, communication. It sort of makes it very stop-start. So by actually introducing an in-house capability, and that doesn't mean going out and hiring an expensive executive coach, that means empowering your own people who may be interested in the developmental side of coaching and what that brings to them, giving people the capacity in their day to spend some time coaching colleagues across the organisation can actually help the business to make change less about a scary project and more part of the business as usual. And what I would like to see, and where more forward-thinking firms are moving towards, is change is no longer referred to as change, because we're always going to be doing something that's different, that's taking us to the next stage, particularly in this day and age of all the challenges that we have. So it kind of creates an embedded culture, which I think is really, really healthy.
As you said, you know, a lot of change in the world at the moment. And so embedding change is just the way we do things, rather than it being this scary thing, is really important. And one of the terms that is used quite a bit is VUCA, so V-U-C-A. Would either of you like to just sort of explain a bit about that for our audience before I sort of launch into my next question?
So VUCA being volatility, uncertainty, complexity and ambiguity was coined a long time ago, but has been sort of in the vernacular since the 9/11 attacks, and is really around recognizing this vortex that we now live in of constant change, and what that does to people and how you can support people through it. And that is not just in the workplace, that's also in our personal lives as well. If you think about the way the world is today, there's just constant churn. We've got war, we've got rising cost of living, we've got climate change, we've got pandemics, we've got what we're told, we've got a little bit of a recession on the horizon. People have so many challenges and so many things hitting them from left, right and center. There's no point preparing people for change as if it were a once and done effort. We need to be supporting people and giving them tools for resilience all the time. And that's why I was very passionate about including a chapter on that in the book. The other chapters are very project centric, which is great and really, really practical and useful. The VUCA chapter is very much, okay, how can I help people in the round all the time with coaching tools?
Thank you. Yeah, that's really, really important point there again. One of the biggest things that in the UK we've experienced recently is all of the changes that were brought about by the pandemic. Certainly as a cybersecurity professional, one of the things that in one way it was sort of scary, but at the same time it was wonderful, was the sudden move to push people onto remote working, onto collaboration platforms. And a lot of that happened very quickly, so perhaps security wasn't built in. But at the same time, IT change programs that security is depended on programming taking years suddenly happened in like 6 months. So perhaps you could sort of say something a little bit about, you know, how that's affected both of you.
Well, certainly from my perspective, it was a breath of fresh air, because for many years I used to go troll up to London, you know, and see people face to face for coaching. But all of a sudden we could do this amazing technology. And I've actually found in some ways it's been more helpful. Training tends to be, you know, when you're in person with a group of people, then I personally prefer that. But actually working one-to-one with somebody online when you're talking about some things which are quite private and they're in their own personal space, as opposed to in an office where you're a bit worried about who's walking by, who can hear, I found some people are able to open up a bit more. And so I haven't really found it a problem, and certainly from what people have said, they are willing to accept it. But I guess really the hybrid approach, and I'm finding now people are saying, how about coming to meet once and then we do the rest on online? And that seems to work really well.
Yeah, it was it was interesting, the suddenness of the move online. I'd been in my new role for a week when lockdown happened, and we had to pivot very, very, very quickly. So there are two main things that I would bring out. So one was in the business as usual world. I was building a team together with my boss. We were creating a change team, which meant a lot of recruitment. Recruitment means onboarding people remotely, sending them IT equipment by courier, which has security issues inherently baked in. So for example, how do you make sure that laptops are completely wiped if they go missing? How do you make sure your data and your IP is completely protected in that scenario, which I think our IT team did an amazing job of? But also, how do you continue to deliver change remotely? How do you corral a team, build a team that can deliver change, and how does that team then engage with the people that they are working with and who you're asking to change? And I honestly thought a lot of our portfolio would stop for 3 to 6 months, and it didn't, and I was really pleasantly surprised that we would continue to deliver change remotely, albeit we had to slightly shuffle the pack in terms of our priorities, which, you know, is our job, that's what we do.
So what I'm also finding is that I'm starting to coach managers who are now struggling with this, I suppose, this inconsistency around who should come into the office and who shouldn't. So they're trying to build teams where people are quite resistant to come into the office, but there aren't there's not enough new policies to actually say you have to come in twice a week. And so this ability to be flexible can cause a few problems. So I often coach managers to help them understand how can they adapt and help their teams to understand the impact this is having by them continually working from home when there is a choice now.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point, that there's just, I think, certainly, again, personally, from my perspective, in one respect, the pandemic was actually really helpful, because all of a sudden, I wasn't just one of these few people who wanted to work from home on a regular basis. Yeah. It was like the world shifted and realised, oh, we can do this from home, quite a lot of us. I think it has definitely changed the attitudes of people. I agree that managers face a new challenge around sort of balancing the wants of individuals and the needs of the organization. Previously, when involved in change, I've always found that being able to have that one-to-one face-to-face conversation was, I was able to influence very effectively. And I'm just wondering how you can sort of achieve that same thing remotely, or do you find there's a bit of a barrier there?
Well, from my perspective, when you're trying to build relationships with new starters and new joiners, if you've interviewed them on Zoom, hired them on Zoom, and you're building that relationship with them on Zoom, inevitably it just takes longer, and you really have to go out of your way to schedule catch-ups with people, because you know you're not going to meet them by the apocryphal water cooler. I don't know if anyone actually has a water cooler anymore. That takes longer, and you have to really put the time in. But it's really bizarre, because when I did eventually go back to the office, I'd forgotten who I hadn't met in person, because I had actually put the time in to develop that relationship. So I thought that was quite interesting. Although it's shocking how tall some people are. So that was interesting. But it's also, as I say, delivering change with people who you haven't met and building that rapport with people, particularly when it comes to things like resistance, which we have a big chapter dedicated to in the book, and how to overcome resistance without the ability to get in front of someone and see their body language and build a rapport very challenging. And I can imagine coaching would be very challenging as well in that setup. Yeah.
And if I could turn this to the training I do as well, what I'm now finding is some people making the decision not to put their cameras on. So interesting, because if you work, you know, if you're in an office, you come in person, you're there. But people are now making that decision not to put their camera on, and that makes it really hard to connect. And a lot of the training I do is about connecting with others. So we have this really interesting conversation. So what I don't want to do is come over as being parental and say, put your camera on or don't bother, you know. But what I really want to say is that what we're doing today is about the ability to connect with people. And the more we have in our field, you know, and putting the camera on just would help that.
So that's a really interesting point, the whole camera on, camera off thing, because I get the view of certainly when you're delivering training, it's really hard remotely if people have their cameras off to gauge, you know, are they getting what you're saying? You know, just that engagement is really difficult. But at the same time, I know there's a lot of neurodivergent people who are so grateful to be able to turn off the camera and sort of reduce that sort of stimulation and anxiety.
But also it could be that they don't have good enough bandwidth. Quite often, yeah. You have your camera on, then you start getting stuttering and problems. So,
in terms of thinking about, obviously, I'm a cybersecurity professional. We're very involved in change. And it's the sort of thing that often gets sort of forgotten. But in terms of, you said earlier on about who this book is for, and I kind of find myself wondering if it's actually a bit wider of an audience than you've said today. There are tools in there that I'm like, oh, I didn't think about that. I could use that. And so I just wonder if it's, let's say, there's more of an audience who could benefit from this. I don't think it is just change practitioners. Specifically, I'm thinking like senior managers, no matter what discipline, would benefit from, you know, because they're involved in change, they're responsible for coaching their staff. Mm. And yeah, just your thoughts on that.
Yeah, definitely agree with what you're saying there, Michaela, because although the primary audience was always change practitioners, as we call them, but actually it is still useful for coaches who are maybe coaching people through change. And a lot of coaches quite like tools and techniques, and so it might help them to reinvigorate their memory of these tools, or even there might be some new ones in there as well. So it's definitely an audience. Yeah. So students of change as well, they might find this as well. I'll hand over to Amy.
No, I couldn't agree more. And I think where the target audience comes from a place of, you know, pragmatism, which is when you're writing and marketing a book, you need to have a very clear primary, secondary, and possibly even tertiary target audience so that you know who you're marketing and talking to. But you're absolutely right from a practical point of view, and this is one of my soapboxes, as Sue knows very well, is everybody is delivering change, whether they think they are or not. And if you are, particularly as you say, Michaela, if you are a senior manager or any kind of people leader, you are going to be delivering change, holding people's hands through that journey. And they're fantastic skills to have. I mean, gosh, if for most people, if you're dealing with any kind of relationship, be it personal or professional, those soft skills will always serve you very, very well. But I think on the non-coaching side, on the change delivery side, those tools are just, they're just good life skills. They're just a good way to organize yourself. So I think there's, yeah, you're absolutely right. And thank you for pointing that out.
You know, great. Thank you. Glad to hear that you both agree. So yeah, everyone out there, whether you're a trustee, executive leadership, senior management, cybersecurity practitioners, whoever you are, really, there's some great tools and things in this book. And as you know, it's very sort of common for people to sort of think about IT and cybersecurity people being very sort of technical, perhaps not having those people skills. And so a book like this can really help sort of develop those, I think. So as you said, you know, we're all involved in change, whether we realise it or not. And, you know, I've mentioned the pandemic as being one of those big changes we've all been through. But the other thing that is just, you know, you can't ignore it with what's going on in the news is climate change and the recognition that from a governance point of view, I see there's a move from sort of ESG being about tick boxing rather than actually, you know, real sustainability actions to help contribute. That seems like a really big challenge for, you know, everybody.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. And that there is, we didn't have much space in the book to sort of talk about what are the drivers of change. And one of the, you know, we talk a lot about technology as a driver for change and consumer behaviour and pandemics. And obviously climate change is right up there as a key driver for change. And if it isn't, it should be. It's something that I'd like to write a lot more on, in particular now that I'm studying ESG within the context of insurance and financial services in general. And there is actually legislation and regulation coming through that will guide organisations as to how they need to start behaving in terms of, instead of, as you rightly say, instead of ticking boxes, what are the actions and the evidence of those actions? You know, what governance do you have in place to evidence and demonstrate your credentials in this area? So if I put it in the insurance context, what type of products are you stopping to offer cover for? So moving away from carbon intense industries and moving towards more sustainable industries. Equally on the investment side, companies who invest, which they all do, how can you evidence that you're not investing in harmful industries? And how do you actually know some of the time? There's so much that we could say about this.
Well, as you were talking, Amy, I was thinking about the potential for, you know, so when I'm coaching people to be more strategic, this is definitely a conversation to be had around, and how can we include this conversation within your role as a strategic leader and manager, because there will be a requirement for that. So it's about helping people to think more widely of their role instead of just thinking of it in terms of, we've just got to get the job done. But as a strategic leader, we have to think about the environment and the changes in terms of that, and the responsibility we all have at that level as well.
Okay, so as we're sort of coming towards the end of our time today, what three things have you picked? Oh, I see Sue's all ready to go there.
I really struggled with this, to be honest, but I thought, who would I invite to dinner? And there's two people who came to mind, and that one is George Michael.
All right.
And the other one is Greg Wallace. I think he's amazing. He's just so enthusiastic.
I mean, my goodness.
You know, his love of food as well, which I have as well. The film I would recommend is Pulp Fiction. I've watched it three times and I still find something different to find. And a book which I recently read was Freaky Dancing by Bez from The Happy Monday.
Oh, gosh.
It was just such fun, that hedonistic world, and he still survived it.
I've focused on books and films and podcasts because that's sort of my thing. I absolutely love, aside from our book, obviously, I love Switch by Chip and Dan Heath. Mm. It's a real change staple, if you will, and the reason I love it is it's very tactile. Every single example is a whole chapter of a case study, and you really get to know this person and this scenario, and you can think, you think about how that change could really be implemented in your own world. And I loved that. The film I love is called October Sky, and it's about 25 years old. It's with a very young Jake Gyllenhaal. It's actually based on a real life story of a chap who was very good at physics and ended up working for NASA. But the whole journey in between was how he got this rocket to launch, basically as a kid, as a sort of layperson, if you will. And it's about product development, it's about strategy, but on a personal level, it's about tenacity, never giving up, resilience, which is why I think it's a fantastic film. Podcasts, I'm a podcast fiend. My favourite is The Rest is Politics with Rory Stewart and Alistair Campbell. And the reason I like it is I'm so fed up with polarised or, you know, binary thinking. This is one guy from the left, one guy from the right. And guess what? They agree on about 95% of things. So it just warms my heart.
I think that's a great shout. I know we're coming to the end, but I'm just going to say that you've sort of raised a really important point there, actually, that there's an awful lot of that sort of black and white thinking generally, and that's obviously one of the things that you have to address through change and coaching skills. Now, I'm just glad you mentioned it. I don't think I've seen it, so I'll have to check that out in terms of the October Sky one, that is. And I'll add my vote for Switch as well. So what do you wish you'd been able to include in the book but didn't get a chance to? Sue, would you like to go?
I wish I'd had more opportunity to talk about my own personal experience. And I guess really this is the challenge of co-writing and also being restricted to the number of words we had. I'd like to have said more about my personal experience of coaching, but also the importance of including an executive space for senior leaders, and not necessarily coaching, but providing that space where they don't have to work towards a goal, but they speak with a professional in a very confidential space. And I've started doing that and it works amazingly. Yeah.
Brilliant. How do people actually get involved if they'd like to on that point?
It's down to the organisation and recognising it. And I have one particular client who recognises the importance of this. And so every opportunity I have, and sometimes when my coaching sort of comes to an end and they've got a number of hours left over, I say, well, would it help if you just have these as thinking space the rest of the hours instead of that specific, we have to meet a particular goal? And if their manager organization agrees to it, and they usually do, then that works really well. Takes the pressure off in some ways.
Okay, that's great. Thank you. And Amy, how about you? What would you have liked to include other than the climate change piece?
Well, I would have liked to have generally written more about the drivers for change. In particular, I'm interested in the way that I think the younger generation will drive organisations to behave differently. So younger people are expecting more environmentally friendly products. They're eating, you know, they're turning away from meat. They're turning away from cosmetics, which harm the environment. And that's making companies change their behaviour. And I don't think we've seen that before, where a specific generation of people has actually driven organisational change to that degree. Consumer behaviour is incredibly powerful nowadays. It never used to be. You used to be, you know, you get the car that you get and you get the microwave that you get. Nowadays, we're really setting the bar and telling companies what we want. And that's what drives change. And it used to be that organisations could choose what they wanted to change and when. Now they're being told. And I'd love to do more on that and research more on that.
You know, that'd be really interesting, actually, to see what your findings are around that when you do. Again, bringing it back to cybersecurity for a moment, what one piece of advice would you give our listeners out there who are worried about how to embed cybersecurity as part of the changes in the organisation?
Well, my piece of advice is never assume it can never happen to you, even if you have an Apple Mac, which I do.
Thank you for that, because that is absolutely a common myth there. Yes,
my nugget predictably tracks back to insurance, which is make sure you've got the right cover, because you don't, a lot of people assume cyber cover means that they'll be covered for absolutely everything. There are so many sort of exclusions in cyber clauses that you really need to understand what you're covered for and what you're not. So make sure you've got the right data protection. That's the stuff that will cost you dear in a lawsuit if you compromise your customers' data.
Yeah, that's a great point. Thank you. And I know there's quite a lot of changes in terms of what companies are willing to cover and the controls people need to have in place to be able to actually claim. So that's probably something that we're going to talk more about on the podcast throughout the year, actually. Yeah, where can listeners come and chat to you if they'd like to find out more?
Well, sort of contact me through LinkedIn, and more than happy to set up a Zoom chat to talk more about coaching and how it can benefit you.
Brilliant, thank you. And Amy?
I'm a big LinkedIn fan. I'm on LinkedIn a lot, so come and find me there. I'm also on Instagram, but I suspect that's less relevant. That's just where I look at pictures of dogs.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. And for people who have not yet got their own copy of this book, where would you recommend they get it from?
Well, there's two main places. One is Amazon, and the other one is direct from Cope and Page. And so Cope and Page, you can get 20% off if you put in Cope and Page 20, I believe, into the when you check out online.
Brilliant, thank you. And as I say, I haven't finished it at all. I've got quite a long way to go, but in terms of what I'm reading, it's very clear, easy to read. The tools and techniques you've got on there, there's absolutely something, I swear, for managers all over, no matter what discipline you work in. So it's going to become, I think, one of those staples. So thank you both for bringing your skills together and sort of identifying this gap and then filling it. Thank you. And thank you for coming and talking to us on Cyberability Savvy.
Thanks for having us, Michaela. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you.
If you'd like to get a copy of the book, we encourage you to buy from Cope and Page, where you can get a 20% discount. The code is Cope and Page, that's Cogan Page 20. That's it for now. Thanks for listening. For more resources on this topic and to learn how our services can help your organisation to be more cyber resilient, visit our website at cyberabilityconsulting.co.uk. If you found this useful, please subscribe and share on Twitter and LinkedIn. I would also appreciate it if you could take a moment to rate and leave a review. You can contribute to future episodes by visiting our website to share your cybersecurity concerns and questions. This show was written and produced by me, Michaela Leavorg, and co-produced and edited by Anna Garner. Music by CFO Garner. I hope you join us next time.